Blog Talk Radio.
And tonight our favorite show is Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. And tonight we're going to be discussing Season 2. We discussed Season 1 earlier in the year. We finally got caught up. The summer movie season is over, so I have time to discuss this sort of thing. And here with me, once again, he was with me for Season 1. He's back again for Season 2. Mr. Pat Mullen, how do you do, sir?
Good evening, Mark, and good evening to all our listeners out there in Podcast Wonderland.
Outstanding. Hey, have you caught any of the Mae Young classic, by the way? By the way, if you're playing the at-home game, take a drink. We made a wrestling reference.
I have seen all but the final episode. Sarah Logan, you are fantastic. I hope they sign you. Piper Niven, way to show big girls can get it done.
I'm only on the first episode, and I hope they give Shayna Baszler a contract. I like her wrestler come MMA kick you in the head gimmick. It works for me. I've only seen one match, but...
Yeah, I think as you'll watch, your opinion may change, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay. You can't see it, but I'm currently pulling on my collar. All right.
But
Kyrie
Sane is fun to watch, and I'll leave you with that.
All right. Yeah, I was kind of waiting for the whole thing to finish, and then I was going to try to binge watch it. The other thing is I'm slowly working my way through Game of Thrones. I finished Season 3, and now you don't have children. And as we all know, I do. It is hard to watch Game of Thrones when you've got kids at home. So I was kicked out of my bedroom where I can at least watch Game of Thrones pretty safely. And I was watching it in the living room, and my kids had their friends over. And so eventually I just gave up because I kept having either fast forward or pause because the show gets a little naughty at times and not appropriate for children. So I started watching the Mae Young classic instead. I was like, oh, fuck it. If I can't watch Game of Thrones, I might as well watch this. So anyway, we are here to discuss Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Season 2, the final season of the show. It was not renewed. Do you know why FX decided? I have some ideas, a little bit in pieces that I've read here and there, but I want to get your thoughts or what you know, why they canceled the show. I think they told them while the second season was going on that there wasn't going to be a third season.
I think what happened was, if I remember correctly, as the last two episodes were airing, they made the announcement, oh, by the way, we're not going to air this show anymore. So that's that. And I remember initially FX declined to mention why it was canceled. As far as what I probably think happened, I think the ratings, which were not particularly strong after Season 1, it was more a case of a kind of almost a cult following that got it renewed. But the ratings themselves apparently didn't differ all that much and didn't hold strongly and the consensus to the beginning of the series was largely negative. So I think once FX, maybe even if they had gotten more positive reviews at the start of the show, they may have chosen to hold on to it. But the show itself took on a drastically different tone in season two at the beginning, probably to try to spike viewership, and it likely backfired. And unfortunately, when they righted the ship in certain ways, it was too little too late, and the show could not sustain its audience.
I don't think you're wrong. I'm going to add this element to it. What I had read was the show was very expensive to shoot. You know, it's a lot of on-scene footage of them performing in various locales. There's a lot of music. I mean, Dennis Leary had to write a lot of the music for the show. And I think FX was like, well, this isn't doing well enough in the ratings to warrant the expense of creating the show, so screw it. And they probably came to the decision late in the second season, which is why it got announced when it did. I'll tell you, going into season two, just talking about it in general, and we'll get to sort of the breakdown of it. You know, I can see what you're saying about them trying to, like, pop a rating with, you know, they were heavy on the sex in the first half of the season. But I think their major flaw with this season is the focus. They took the focus away from Gigi, who is the star of this thing. And as we talked about with season one, you know, it is a joy to hear her sing. And correct me if I'm wrong, but she doesn't get a whole lot of singing to do in season two. They gave a lot of the performing aspects of the show to Ava, who, and a lot of focus on Ava. And I don't know why. Like, I understood the storyline, but you could have, and the storyline is basically Ava and Flash rekindle their once upon a time romance, and it affects the band. Now, that's a fine enough story, but then you still have to focus on how that affects Gigi, or you don't really have a show. And that's kind of what happened with season two. There's so much of a focus on Ava that the show lost really everything about it that was fun and interesting, with the exception of the other storyline featuring Bam and Rehab, which is kind of hilarious, and one big long joke about Hamilton. why don't you go ahead and weigh in there about some of your overall thoughts here, and then we'll get into the breakdown.
I mean, you brought up Bam and Rehab and the kind of knock on Hamilton that they did. I don't really recall ever seeing much of those two guys in any other show, and I think we stated this last time. But when they're allowed to get into their goofy stuff, when the show starts dragging in the first part of the season, Bam and Rehab keep me interested in the show just because they make me laugh.
Yeah.
There's no other reason. And for those who aren't aware of the in-joke on Hamilton, Rehab, who as his name suggests is a little bit off the beaten path and has had some issues with drugs, writes a musical about the Irish potato famine that features 29 songs about potatoes. While, of course, it's Rehab, and so everyone thinks he's crazy, we actually get pulled into this whole thing where they meet a Broadway actor / star who purchases the rights to the show, and then he wants to change everything, and then, but he likes Bam, Rehab's out, it strains their friendship, as wacky as it may be. And we get this whole thing where eventually we do get the musical produced. And the high point is when the gentleman who produces the musical, Campbell Scott, in the show, who's an extreme method actor, goes to the lengths that the people involved in the show can only eat the things that were available to people who suffered during the famine, such as tree bark, grass, and things like that. And the level to which Rehab touches insanity is all kinds of fun.
All right, so let's let's get into the breakdown here. The first couple of episodes, everything starts off with a funeral. And it's one of the backup singers who has passed away. Her name is Mickey. They find some footage of the Heavens, and Gigi Bam Rehab and Johnny Rock start watching the footage together without Flash and Ava. And, of course, there's a scene, there's a footage of Flash and Ava performing together in Nashville, which ends with a passionate kiss. And so they had alluded to the affair in the previous season, and that sort of set up second season two. So we knew that we knew they were going this way. And Johnny gets pissed, and he threatens to go solo and leave the band and everything. At the end of it, though, you know, Johnny sort of gets his head back into things. We get a performance by Elizabeth Gillies of Ain't No Valentine, and they make custom maracas out of Mickey's ashes as sort of a, you know, I'm sorry, you know, consolation sort of a thing. And you think that that's the end of it, but nope, that's just the beginning. Then we, with episode two, I'm going to let you pipe in here in just a minute, Pat. But starting with episode two and going through the next couple of episodes, we have a departure from one of the bigger attractions to the series, which is the actual music. And there's a focus on two storylines sort of intersect, which is Ava feeling like there's something missing in her life and wanting and needing some sort of fire, something to give her inspiration, and Gigi feeling like she's missing out on the rock star lifestyle. And so Ava talks about wanting to have a threesome, and then Gigi wants to have a threesome too, and that sort of devolves into just wanting to experiment with a lesbian fling. And this sort of thing kind of goes on for a couple of episodes. We'll talk about those episodes in just a moment, but what did you think, Pat, of the first two episodes?
The first episode tried to basically lay the roots for what was supposed to be the concurrent storyline of the season with the big reveal of the actual Flash Ava affair and what went on with it, and that, you know, it wasn't just a one-time thing, it was a year-long thing, and there were all these feelings left over, allegedly, from the looks they gave each other. And episode two just takes a really hard left turn into territory where, from a logical writing standpoint, it doesn't really make any sense. I get that they tried to plant the seeds of Ava freaking out about her mortality after their friend Mickey had died, and that she needs something in her life, but that would mean more something along the lines of accomplishment or achievement or a legacy, not I want to have sex with you and another woman, Johnny. So from a logical writing standpoint, it makes no sense. What it is it's an attempt at a ratings grab by introducing, you know, the potential of two hot women hooking up. And then they go ahead and double down on it by having Liz Gillies as Gigi to have her lesbian hookup with Dobby, I believe the name was, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, who's this really sexy singer in a band, the bar scene. And what that does is plant seeds of dissension between her and Flash, while at the same time, it's not really necessarily the impetus for the breakups, which we'll see happen, so much as it's a ratings grab plot device that they think will make sense in the context, and it sort of does, but not really, and kind of immediately starts the show on a negative path for me. Whereas, the whole story of the show is the development of Gigi as a rock star through the family roots, through the mentoring, so to speak, of her dad and the band itself and her talent level. And it's two episodes in and we've already completely gotten away from that.
Now, let me say this. If you have a strong enough show with strong enough characters and an equally strong storyline, you can focus on other characters and give them a lot of screen time. Okay, everyone take a drink. I'm about to mention The Wire. The Wire got away from McNulty in season 4 especially. It came roaring back with season 5. But season 4, McNulty becomes almost a minor character, and I don't even think he's in some episodes. The focus is on the four new characters who are middle school students. And in the world of the Baltimore drug scene and the Baltimore Police Department, there's other stuff going on. But it's rich and it's interesting, and those four middle school characters were revelations. They were fantastic. The problem with Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll is if you want to establish this storyline with Ava, where I'm okay with the I need a fire in my life, I need a change, and she already had some misgivings and she doesn't really believe in herself as a singer. So I get that the first thing she would want to do is turn to sex. And, with prodding later on, and we'll talk about that in a moment, with prodding later on, she's, that needing of a change goes from sex to notoriety and fame, the ability to produce music, sing songs. I'm okay with how they did it. What got frustrating for me is that for the next couple of episodes, and really the whole rest of the season, there's so much more focus on Ava than there is Gigi, and Ava's not that interesting of a character. The woman playing her is fine. There's nothing. She doesn't give a bad performance, and she certainly doesn't sing poorly, but she's not a strong enough character to give that much screen time to in a 22-minute show. If this was an hour show, and without commercials, like on HBO or Showtime, and you want to give Ava her own storyline, but you're giving equal or better time to Gigi and Johnny Rock, and then you're filling out the rest of the show with Bam and Rehab storyline, okay, that I'm okay with. But in a 22-minute show that is supposed to be around the trials and tribulations of this young starlet and her rock and roll dad, her aging rock and roll dad, you get none of what is supposed to attract you to this show until it's too late. And you get all of this Ava character, and like I said before, I'm just not into her. And apparently neither was the rest of the show's audience, or the show would have been renewed for season 3. But I really think the writing team goofed in switching the focus to her. And then again, you have the Gigi thing, where it feels like they didn't have anything for Gigi to do in the first draft of the script. So they were like, oh, and we'll give Gigi a lesbian fling for a couple of episodes. We'll have her focus on sex. It's like, okay, but we don't care about her that way. We care about her as somebody struggling with the rock and roll scene, not somebody struggling with, she says, I'm missing out on the rock and roll scene, I'm missing out on the rock and roll experience, but that I could deal with that for one episode, but for like 3 or 4, it's frustrating.
Yeah, we've seen in a sitcom in general, especially a 22-minute format, you have an A plot and a B plot basically 9 times out of 10. Occasionally, a show is built enough and balanced enough that you can include a C plot when you have an ensemble type cast, like in a show we'll talk about in a couple weeks, Fuller House, and its predecessor, Full House. This is a show where it's not an ensemble cast. There's a very clear focus driven on one particular character. Ava is basically a supporting player in season 1 without any level of depth to her, other than a few fleeting moments where she is a surrogate mother to Gigi in certain scenes. We go from that in this season
to all of a sudden Ava is the prominent feature character, and we're not given any reason to care why. Yes, there's the affair with Flash, which is something, I guess, but we find no real motivation for it. Her drives are seemingly completely on a whim, where at a certain point I was surprised they didn't say she was going through menopause, which would explain her somewhat neurotic behavior and mood swings, because that just seemed like a thing they would do, and they didn't. And we got just a lot of out-of-the-blue stuff without any context as to why it mattered with Ava. And we completely pushed Gigi aside and put her in very silly, superficial situations where you and I both said one of the strongest points of the initial season of this show was letting Liz Gillies shine as the star, not just in terms of her character, but in just letting her sing and belt some songs out that were really outstanding. We got hardly any of that through the first 5 to 6 episodes of the season, other than her singing in the first episode.
Yeah, it's a real misfire. You know, if nothing else, if I didn't like anything else about an episode, at least I got to hear Elizabeth Gillies sing. And, you know, that's why we played the music when we did the podcast a few months back. It's so
and what do we have
to
play tonight?
Nothing. We got nothing to play. Episode 3, it revolves around Gigi teaching Flash to be a better kisser, which I could not care less about. And Flash seems like a big pussy in this episode.
And every other episode.
We'll talk in a little bit about the B plot, Rehab and
Bam,
and just in a few minutes, but I kind of want to get through this arc first. My real issue with this episode is, you know, Gigi came to New York to look for her dad and be a star. Why in God's green earth would she prod Ava to sing a song? I suppose I can buy for a moment, like, hey, you know, she loves Ava, and Ava's been a surrogate mom to her, so she wants to give her something to hold on to. So go ahead, you know, sing a song, and because she insists that she sings one per show, thinking this isn't going to get out of hand. But it, on the one hand, like, I can see that, you know, as a personal thing between Gigi and Ava. On the other hand, it's a little hard for me to buy that from a character whose sole purpose was to get famous. Why would you give away part of your spotlight to the backup singer? And it was one of those sort of ham-fisted moments of the series to get the Ava plotline going. It was frustrating to watch.
It's one of those times where almost whenever the main star of a show ends up leaving and they replace his character with another character, and there's that sort of handoff that's really half-heartedly done that the audience is just pissed off at because this guy's leaving and all of a sudden we're supposed to accept this replacement. Think Welcome Back Cotter with Vinnie Barbarino and Bo. Think 21 Jump Street when Tom Hansen leaves and you get Mac as his replacement. Even something as recent as That 70s Show where they replaced Topher Grace's Eric with Randy. This is essentially a really botched, quick version of that handoff where they decide they're going to shift the focus of the show to Ava and make the second season more about Ava's turn into Ava X as opposed to Gigi's continuing attempt to rise to fame with the rest of the cast backing her. And it's not only poorly handled in the sense that you brought up where there's no sensible motivation for Gigi to step aside and put herself on hold for Ava, who realistically already has had her time in the sun, maybe not as the lead member of a band, but I don't think Michael Anthony would complain about the years 1978 to 1998 as a member of Van Halen.
If they had written it where she had told, you know, See, I think a much better way to have done it would have been Gigi is forced to let Ava step up and sing a few songs because her, you know, because there's something wrong with her voice, you know, or
goddamn, pal, your laryngitis.
Yeah, you know, if they had established from the beginning that, you know, Gigi was having some difficulties with her voice and, you know, like, hey, I need to take breaks in between sets. So why don't we? So hey, Ava, I heard you sing on, you know, in that footage, Mickey's footage. Why don't you sing a few songs and that sort of thing? I would have been okay with it, you know, and then it runs away. To just sort of do it out of the blue, because Gigi loves Ava. I as you said, and as I said before, I just don't buy it. I don't buy why she would do it. So, very, very, you know, as I was watching, I was just like, oh God. And then again, as you said before, they doubled down on it in the next episode, which is like the whole thing is building up to the Ava X performance. You know what? That's the next two episodes. The first one sort of deals with Johnny trying to be a part of the project, and you know his ideas are sort of pushed to the side, you know. And at the moment, Gigi and Ava are bonding and everything else, and then Johnny gets fired from his job, you know, part of the project. And it's the next episode where she actually performs, and it turns out fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about, up to this point, what we know about BAM and rehab. We talked before about how this is their whole plot line is a send up of Hamilton. It's just lots of Hamilton jokes. But essentially, what we've got here in the first half of the season is something that was introduced last season as well, is the 29 song cycle about the Irish potato famine. Which garners interest from Campbell, who wants to make it into an off-Broadway show. And as you said before, once Rehab is convinced to sign on the dotted line, because it's Campbell, after a couple of false starts, it's immediately changed into something else. And you know, and his initial idea is basically, you know, it's almost like in name only. You know, it was essentially it's an inspired by situation.
And we get the initial, again, like we did last season at points during the Beast Corps movement, we get the initial wedge between Bam Bam and Rehab when, you know, Campbell tells them he doesn't want Rehab's basic anything about that other than the initial idea, but he loves Bam Bam's drumming.
Right.
And so Rehab leaves in disgust, and Bam Bam hangs out and wants to take a ride to see where this is going.
Yeah, the actors who play Bam Bam and Rehab play very well off each other. I wasn't a huge fan of Rehab in the first season because I thought he was sort of one-note joke about, you know, drugs. And they seem to have gone away from that in the second season, and they made him more of a hoity-toity artist. You know,
you know who he honestly reminded me of this season, if you combine Rehab first season, Rehab second season, and now I'm not saying the level of performance is on par, so don't take it that way, but his character became very much a Reverend Jim Ignatowski for me.
I don't know who that is.
Christopher Lloyd on Taxi.
Oh yeah,
I would compare him favorably to that. Where no, he didn't do the physical exaggerated comedy that Christopher Lloyd did, and the delivery was very different. But he's playing a burnt out guy who has these off the wall ideas, but occasionally one comes up and it's brilliant, and
you're able to see this through for all the jokes it's worth.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that aspect of Rehab. When it wasn't about drugs for him and it was about art, you know, and he didn't want to sell his soul, but he has to make money, and, you know, and there's that conflict between him and Bam, you know, because Bam Bam sees these opportunities and says, let's take them. These are opportunities to make money and to make our own legacy outside of the heathens and the assassins. And then you have Rehab, who's this character who's like, no, I don't, I have such integrity that, you know, the money is nice, but the art should come first. And isn't that the classic debate? You know, isn't that always the way? There's always one person who's just like, hey, we need to pay bills. And one person who's like, I don't, you know, fuck the bills, you know, art first, fuck art, let's kill. So they take to that debate, A Tale as Old as Time, and they have Bam Bam and Rehab representing the different sides, and it works very well. I you know, and Bam Bam starts to lose his identity and becomes sort of Campbell's project, which is fun.
When after their initial dispute, when Rehab kind of gets drawn back into things and he has to deal with the new Bam Bam, who is this sleek, artsy Bam Bam, and nobody's buying it, especially, you know, Rehab at that point. It's just fun to see Bam Bam try and convince himself this is who he is, when you know eventually he's going to turn back into the guy who was willingly jerked off for food by a man.
Okay. Yes, for ribs, for very special ribs. All right, so we get to the second half of the season, episodes 6 through 10, and this is where we start to shift a bit away from where we started, where, you know, we're shifting back to somewhat towards where the show should have been all along. Ava is completely caught up in her new Ava X project. Her and Flash are writing music together. Flash is helping her with her hair and wardrobe, and they're bonding. Flash proposes to Gigi on his plot of land, and and it's so funny. She's just like, he's like, I listened to what you said, and I thought you were giving me a sign. And he was like, she's like, I say all kinds of stupid shit. I'm just a kid. And I thought that was a very self-aware comment by Gigi. I did enjoy the bit out in Jersey. I actually liked this episode a lot for that reason. You know, the whole monologue that she gives to Flash about how she's just a kid. She doesn't know what she wants out of life, and she just says things. And, you know, having the concept of a family and kids and everything else is nice to her, but she still has a mission that she needs to fulfill.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that when the show got focused back on allowing Gigi to be its central attraction and have scene-stealing moments, that it got better?
I know, right? I really enjoyed the direction that this episode takes. And we're finally not, you know, and it, this may be the prude in me, but we're finally away from the heavy sex of the first couple of episodes, thankfully. And we're back into playing music again. Though there was no folk, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and normally when they do a full performance of something, they'll say what the song was or whatever. Yeah, there's none of that in this except for the first episode. Episode 7, more songwriting between Ava and Flash, and I forgot to mention it earlier, but Ava and Flash end up having sex together, and they were going to say it was a one-time thing, and they end up having sex again. When Flash shows her, you know, the land in New Jersey.
I'm just going to throw this out there. Guys, I live in New Jersey. Ain't nobody getting that excited over a plot of land in New Jersey.
Well, here's what I liked about this. And here's where it made sense for Ava and Flash to be together you know, Flash is, you know, in 50 years old, presumably, is around 50. If I would imagine he's around the same age as Johnny Rock. And they mentioned multiple times that he's 50. He is trying to build a life with somebody, and he thought he could build a life with Gigi, but Gigi kind of shunned him. And now here's this woman who's got years on her, and they have a past together, and they come from the same place, so they both appreciate the land that he's got. See, that all made sense, and this is where the writing, I thought, got a lot better. You know, it starts off so shaky this season, but then the writing really takes off with these last couple of episodes. So this all made sense to me. And I loved the scene at the therapist's office where they announced to Johnny and Gigi that they're together, and the therapist kind of does all the talking. And Johnny's just kind of snorts.
Yeah, this is Dennis Leary's probably his high point in the show, for me at least.
Mm-hmm.
Because he
just sort of snorts.
For once, I'm sorry, go ahead.
He just sort of snorts with derision and says, "Have fun, kids." You know, Gigi is sort of holding back a lot of anger. She does a great job of playing cool, and of course, we know what she does shortly thereafter. She wrecks Flash's apartment and all but one guitar.
That
makes her sound better.
And for everybody who got into this show, I know there was a large percentage of people, myself included, who watched the show because its main build star was Dennis Leary, and a lot of us, you know, have gotten to either really like or really hate Dennis Leary over the years. I'm a fan. I like most of the things he's done, but most of the things he's done are Dennis Leary outbursts and angry comic. And this is a scenario where he got to play a really subtle, understated, not role, but a really subtle, understated take on the events going on around him. And it's good in the sense that it's him getting to do something you don't normally see from him, and he does it well. And it's also one of those moments from Johnny where Johnny, unbeknownst to him, shows maturity, because he's well aware of the circumstances of this hookup between Flash and Ava at this point and what the likely outcome is going to be, which is why his reaction is very understated and smug. Have fun, kids.
Yep. It was a very good bit of acting from Dennis Leary, who you do get that sense of he's just fed up with the two of them. And it's like, you know what? You fucking deserve each other. Which I thought was great, and I actually thought that was an honest reaction from a 50-year-old guy who has spent the better part of this season being shunned and pushed aside, and you know, and is made to feel unappreciated. And you know,
his
and then
best
the two
line
of them
in that show, his best line in that show since the first season, what, that movie with Jeff Bridges as the asshole dad?
It's good stuff. So yeah, this was a great episode, and I did enjoy that. I was a little, you know, the bit where she destroys the apartment and chainsaws up the guitars, I was like, really? Is that what, you know? Did we need to make her, you know, the jilted, angry, you know, lover? And I was like, I guess, you know, it's the kind of thing that Johnny Rock would have done, you know, in his youth. So, like, father, like, daughter, and I got that connection. It was just sort of an eye-roll moment for me.
But while this was going on, in my head, I had the Judas Priest song Turbo Lover just playing. So, honestly, if you ever end up watching this scene again, mute it and play that horrible song over the top of it, and it's fantastic.
Moving on to episode 8. The famine rehab bit is their fasting, and at the end of the episode, Pam gets rehab to eat edible crayons, which I thought was interesting. Was a funny little bit there. I actually thought that the better stuff was the shots of Feast. I actually enjoyed what they showed here. The little bit of music we actually get in this season is the feast rap. And actually, I thought it was fun. The bit where they're all chasing each other backstage, I love Scooby-Doo almost, you know, and Gigi and Johnny are trying to rub their new relationships in the face of Ava and Flash. I was like, eh. Again, I'm glad this was only one episode because that's about all I could take of it.
Yeah, and again, to catch everybody up, the singer that Gigi had hooked up with for her lesbian experience, Davi, is back in the picture with Gigi in this episode and decides that she can hook Johnny up with her 26-year-old friend who's looking to hook up with an older guy. And it comes off as a very desperate attempt to kind of throw it in Flash and Ava's faces that they each have been traded in for a younger, newer model, so to speak. And, of course, you know, what winds up happening is Davi ends up hooking up with the girl while they all walk in on it, a la Scooby-Doo taking the mask off the scary old man from the amusement park, who you knew it was the whole time.
Yeah, like I said, I'm glad they didn't have more episodes to sort of drag that sort of thing out, and they immediately go to the high point of this season, the return of Callie Thorne and her boobs. Fantastic. Callie Thorne, one of my favorite actresses in Hollywood. She
Dennis
is, of
Leary's
course,
too, apparently.
Indeed. She is Gigi's mother, and she comes back and begins writing songs with Johnny, and she has an ulterior motive. She's broke, and she's trying to attach her wagon to Gigi. And even though Johnny gets wind of this and is made to understand that that's exactly what Kat's doing, he doesn't care as such, and he finds that him and Kat still have a romantic connection. They have a creative connection. They have a romantic connection. And it's like, you know what? I gave a lot of years to Ava, and she threw it in the toilet for Flash, and he didn't feel appreciated. So he's with somebody who does appreciate him. Now, I think if we had gotten to season three, I think we would have seen a scene where Kat, you know, tells Johnny she never loved him, and all of the blowjobs were just to get him to do what she wanted him to do, and there was never anything there but a desire to make money again off of Gigi. But we didn't get it, and what we did get is clearly Kat manipulating Johnny, but Johnny allowing himself to be manipulated. Like, he knows what she's doing, but fuck it, he's getting blowjobs out of it, so who cares? and Gigi's benefiting from them being together, as they are both solely concerned with her career and nothing else, you know, to the point where Johnny, after cajoling and bribing with sex, gives up his attempt at a solo career, another one, and offers to do jingles. He had been offered jingles previously, and he actually starts to take them up so that they can get some money rolling in. They break up the Assassins, and they decide that they're going to get a younger band to back her up so that she can become the star that, you know, that they need her to be. And I really thought these two episodes were fantastic. The whole thing ends with Ava looking forlornly at Johnny Rock as he performs his solo gig. Her trying to warn him away from Kat, and ultimately, it ends with her and Flash having some degree of a fight, and they're being partially blinded in one eye by the maracas. And, you know, when Flash's attempt to make things right with Ava, he breaks the maracas that they created in episode one, and the dust flies everywhere and gets into her eye, and it's all awkward and funny and terrible, and it's everything that Ava deserved.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. I think they realized, I don't know whether it was through test audiences or maybe just they felt it out as they were writing it, that while you're initially supposed to root for Ava, there's no reason to, and there's every reason to dislike her. And the end of the episode where the maracas are shattered, spilling ash and bone matter into her eyes, is great. And on top of that, you go back to Dennis Leary's line of have fun, kids, and you get to see the type of people they are, where she's down on the ground yelling she's blind, asking for Flash's help, and he's just completely resistant to the idea. And she says, you know I can see you, right? And he goes, you said you were blind. She goes, in one eye, asshole.
Right.
And then you realize the sort of gift of the Magi that they've gotten, where they each think they've gotten something and they both wind up with nothing they can use. Whereas now,
right.
Say what you want to about the relationship between Johnny, Kat, and Gigi, but Johnny's motivated because Johnny, even though he's a very, very flawed parent, still does have a fatherly love for Gigi and wants to be involved in the process. Yes, there is that selfish gain motivation, but he's also shown a lot of times where he genuinely does care about where she's going. And you have very much the same side of the coin with Kat, where, yeah, she needs Gigi because she's broke and has nothing, and this is how she can get something out of it, but she's also got to put into it to get out of it. So while it all seems self-serving to an extent, they are putting in something to it, and they all realize kind of in a weird, oddly parental, you know, child pact that, yeah, we're all upfront about this, and it's the Jim Cornette argument about the upfront cunt versus the behind the back cunt. Where,
take a drink, everyone.
Yeah, they're a cunt, but they're upfront about it, and I can have at least respect for someone who's acknowledging that, as opposed to the person who's trying to say they aren't and does everything to the contrary.
Yeah, and just from a performance and storyline writing, this was the best of the season. As much as I said, you know, the actress who plays Ava is just fine, she at least, the look that she gives Johnny when he's performing on stage, you get that sense of, I fucked up, and I'm in love with this guy. You know, there's so, you can get so much in a look if the actor plays it right, without a lick of dialogue, and it's her best performance of the entire season. By far.
And isn't that really sad? Because that's one of those scenes where she's given the least to do and is able to make the most of it because it's a well-written scene, giving her the opportunity, if she can, to deliver a very strong character moment, and she does. Whereas every other episode up to the first six, or of the first six, I should say, she is given a heavy, heavy chunk of time with nothing in it that matters. And so you look back at that, and if she's able to do that and emote like that with her face, she probably could have done a whole hell of a lot more, and you wasted it.
I wonder if she's been in anything else. I know her
from, and maybe not the most flattering movies, but damn it, I love this movie anyway. I instantly recognize her as from Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. Don't know how you feel about that movie. She was a mean girl in the high school clique, but she became a fashion editor for Vogue and has very complimentary things to say about Michelle's designs at their high school reunion.
Okay. I remember the movie. It was fun. So her film credits, just the last, she had a lot of stuff in 2011. But the last couple of years, she was in Kids vs. Monsters in 2015. In 2013, she was in The Violation. And in 2012, she was in Anything But Christmas. She looks like she started in film and a lot of TV movies, as near as I can tell. She started in 1992. I'm looking to see what the biggest thing. Oh, she was in The Hebrew Hammer. Oh, boy.
Was she in Superstar?
Yes.
Was she Avion?
Yes.
Yes, okay, I know her from that, too. That's actually a good little part for her, too. She's very good in that. And I don't know if Molly Shannon's Mary Catherine Gallagher character is your cup of tea. I happen to enjoy it.
And as far as TV, she has a lot of TV credits. The last couple of things she was in was obviously Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. But prior to that, she was in 3 episodes of Anger Management, and then she was in an episode of Marin. She was in an episode of 90210, 4 episodes, as a matter of fact, and she was on an episode of Rules of Engagement. And she's had an episode here or there and a bunch of other things. So, you know, she gets work. She's not terrible. She was, believe it or not, she was also in a video game, Resident Evil Revelations 2.
Huh.
So with that being said, the closing out of the BAM rehab storyline is that, you know, after all of this encouragement to give up his integrity and go for the money and have his dream changed and everything else, rehab pulls a fast one. And he invites people who work for Michael Flatley to come see Feast. They love it. They decide that they're going to buy the rights to it from Campbell, who's going to take the money and do his passion project, My Left Foot, the musical, which I got a good laugh at. And in doing so, because this thing never officially debuted on Broadway, BAM doesn't actually get any credit. And Rehab gets, presumably a shit ton of money from this deal, breaking up the friendship. So what did you think of the conclusion of their storyline, their Feast storyline?
I liked it. I thought it was probably about as well done as you could for such an oddball but fun story with these two characters. This is the storyline more than anything else that I really would have liked to see where they were going to go with it in season 3 if it had continued, because, you know, as we said, the assassins are fired by Gigi, Johnny, and Kat when they make their power play against Ava and Flash. Unfortunately, because of that, you have the what's the word I'm looking for here? The collateral damage of Bam Bam and Rehab being let go from the band. But Rehab is now rolling in cash from this musical, and Bam Bam's left with nothing. So to decide where you would have picked up with these characters in season 3 would have been worth watching if they were to continue being a part of the show in a regular role. I could have easily seen them turning into either recurring characters or characters who appear in maybe one out of every 4 episodes during the season because of the changes that were being held. So I think they did it. They tied it up well for this year and gave you enough to ponder heading into what would have been the next season to keep you interested, at least on that end. It's more so what they were going to do with the now divided camps of formerly the assassins versus Johnny, Gigi, Kat, and the new band.
Yeah, you've got the new assassins and you've got the Ava X crew, basically. I would have liked to have seen a season 3. I do enjoy the show, even though it had a rough start with season 2. But overall, there was enough there for me to be interested in what would have happened in a season 3. But such is life. Like I said, not to beat a dead horse, but overall, it's a mixed bag for this season. I was telling my wife, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, built into it, has a niche audience. And if everybody in that niche watches the show, it can be successful. But if you have a situation where even the niche isn't watching, and it's an extremely small audience. And if you look at the ratings for season 2, we're talking like it's less than 1. It's 0.5 U.S. million viewers. So I don't have the ratings as such, but I got this in viewers. You know, it's a 0.53, 0.33, 0.56. You know, and it's just nothing over a 1 here. So,
Mm-hmm.
Even for a cable show, it's not great. There's some issues here. So, like I said, if the niche isn't watching, the show is not going to be long for this world. And I think it was a good effort overall, if you look at both seasons one and season two. I don't know what Elizabeth Gillies is doing now, but I'm hoping she gets more singing. Yeah, I'm hoping she gets more singing opportunities in the future. I'm going to let you give your final thoughts here, and I'm actually going to look her up and see if she's done anything since then.
This is a show that reminds me of a college art course I took. I didn't take it seriously at first, and as a result, I got an F on my first test in that class. In order to get an A for that class, which I needed to retain my scholarship, I literally had to come up with A's on the next exam every time I took one, which was about four exams and a term paper that would have basically been my deciding factor more than anything. Take episodes 1 through 5 as the F that I got. Take episodes 6 through 10 as the concerted effort that was made to really put everything back together and make it the best thing possible and get that A. If I were to give this season a letter grade, I would give it a B, really based on the terrible start. But the finish to me was so strong and had so many good things about it that I can't give it just an average grade like C. It's got to be considered a little bit above average as a B. I think there was a lot of potential for a third season to do a lot of good things. But unfortunately, as such is life, we do not get that.
So I have some good news. Starting October 11th on the CW, she will be in a starring role on the reboot of Dynasty.
They're rebooting Dynasty.
They are. Dynasty is an
upcoming
American crime.
That worked out for Dallas, didn't it? At 90210.
Set to air on the CW. It stars Grant Cho as Blake Carrington, Natalie Kelly as Crystal Flores, and Elizabeth Gillies as Blake's daughter, Fallon. You know what? Just because she's in it, I may give this a shot. I figure I watch all the other Arrowverse shows in the CW. Why not give this one a swing?
Was that related to Falcon Crest? I don't remember.
I don't know. I was too young to watch it when it was originally on.
I remember Linda Evans and what's-her-name fighting in a pool. That's what I remember of Dynasty.
Yeah. I remember a little bit of Dallas. Not that I watched any of this shit. If it didn't have, you know, four combat vets not using their weapons but coming up with brilliant ways to thwart the enemies and, you know, and one of those guys had a mohawk and talk jive, I wasn't interested.
Yeah, without a talking car, I was pretty dissatisfied.
I think there's a Knight Rider movie coming out. All right. So with that said, we're going to go ahead and do plugs. Pat, what are you doing these days? I know you sometimes guest spot on the 401 Ground and Pound. Have you been working on any of the podcasts?
There's some things in the works. Unfortunately, with the transition to a new job, there's always a wrench thrown in there, and that's what's happening. So I'm kind of game planning more so at this point for 2018 than anything else. But, I am back as a fairly regular commentator on the 411 Ground and Pound radio show. It airs here on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Normally, I am on the show unless I am precluded by some emergency, so you can listen to me there. And also, Mark, I believe I'm once again going to guest star on TV Party very soon.
Yes. You will be back here. We'll go ahead and transition into my plugs. We've got a pair of It's next week. We got a Damn You Hollywood reviewing the new It and then an on-trial of the old It. Jesse Starcher will be on TV Party tonight on September 19th. So we're going to talk Ozark. And then you'll be back on the 26th of September, where we'll be discussing Fuller House Season 3. And that's it for the month of September. I don't think I got you listed for anything else for the rest of the year. Nope, not that I can see. Yeah, so that's it. We got Fuller House, and then we're pretty much done with you and I. You and I will have to start planning some TV parties for 2018. You know, I We weren't able to do Game of Thrones season one. It just didn't work out for us. But at some point, when I get caught up and I finish all the way through season seven, I was planning on doing just sort of an overall discussion of what I have seen. Maybe I'll have you on for that, and we can kind of do the high points of each season. I don't know. We can talk about it.
Yeah, I hope you set the show for 4 hours if you're going to try to cram all that into one show.
There's a lot of information to discuss, but
yeah,
I was just gonna hit the high points.
I pretty much, as a heads up, do my usual re-binge watch of Oz every January. So if you want to keep that in mind for a potential TV party at some point.
Okay, I've rewatched Oz a couple of times, but there's nothing saying, you know, I love a good Oz. So we'll see. Certainly. I discussed Oz with...
We can put some fan polling out there on Twitter.
There you go. I discussed Oz with Robert Winfrey a little ways back, but I think we just sort of hit the high points of the entire series and didn't break it down by series like you and I, like we do on TV Party. So that is certainly an option. All right, everybody. I want to thank Pat for being on with me. He's always a pleasure. This has been... TV Party Tonight's review of Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll Season 2. Please join us for our next TV party. For Pat Mullen, I am your mandated reporter, Mr. Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave. Oh, wrong one.